Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Hello, you're listening to America This Week. This is Tim Reed, joined by Carrie Weber, Matt Malone. Father Matt Malone is out this week. And we're talking to Luke Hansen about Guantanamo Bay and the plans to potentially close the facility. Now, Luke, we're going to take a couple calls, but first I just want to ask you a bit about your personal experience of visiting the Guantanamo Bay facility. How close were you able to get, and you know, were you able to meet with some of the some people there? What was that like? This was a couple of years ago you visited.
Yeah, the first time I visited was in October 2012, and on that visit, I was only able to visit the legal camp or where the military commission hearings are taking place. But the really powerful part of that experience was meeting family members who lost loved ones in the 9/11 attacks who were able to observe the legal hearings. And it really, I was just profoundly moved by their presence and the pain that they still feel. The second time I went to Guantanamo was in July 2013, and that time I was able to visit the prison camps. I was given tour of most of the camps, except for the secret CIA facility, which is there, and I was able to interview a number of guards and public affairs officers and administrators there. During the entire week, though, we were only able to see prisoners for about 10 minutes or so. So I found that on both trips, our access to the prisons and the prisoners themselves was extraordinarily limited, but I was able to see additional dimensions to the whole Guantanamo story. So the second time, I spent a lot of time with soldiers who were deployed there, and I asked them questions about their experience and some of the questions they ask about it, and I was profoundly touched by the stories that they shared.
Now, we're talking with Luke Hansen, who's a Jesuit and a former associate editor at America. He's studying theology out in Berkeley, California. And we're going to go to a caller now, Luke. Diane from South Carolina, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You have a question. I'm well, thanks.
Yes, I guess the best way to ask it is in addressing the difference, or how you address the difference between looking at the prisoners at Guantanamo as legal prisoners versus war-related prisoners.
All right. Thank you very much. Luke, do you want to jump in there?
Sure. It's a great question because a major shift happened after 9/11 and how the United States responded to terrorism. So primarily before 9/11, we took a criminal justice approach, and we would, the FBI was very involved, and our intelligence agencies were very involved, and we would, if we suspected somebody of terrorism or if terrorism occurred, we would investigate it, we would charge people in federal court, and we would hold them accountable through the existing judicial system. We took a very different approach after 9/11, which was this sort of war framework where we said that, you know, anyone that we sort of detain during this war can be held indefinitely without the normal rights of prisoners as unlawful enemy combatants. However, I think the really important legal and moral question is that we were accusing every one of these men of having violated a law. They were either being accused of international terrorism or they were being accused of some sort of war crime. And that's why I've always felt that it's so important that we have a really substantial and meaningful legal process to sort of test the accusations in a court of law instead of just holding the men and sort of painting sort of a broad picture of their guilt, to actually bring forth evidence that demonstrates that they are guilty of what we're accusing them of. So, yes, our response to terrorism has changed dramatically, but we're still accountable to the law post 9/11. And the law that existed and that really served us well for decades before the 9/11 attacks.
Thanks, Luke. We've got a couple more callers, and we're going to bring in Sharon, who's driving to Colorado. Sharon, do you have a question for Luke Hansen?
Yes, what happens to Guantanamo Bay if the United States closes down that facility? Would the Cubans be able then to turn it over to someone else, say the Russians or the Chinese? I've only heard that discussion once. A lot of discussion about Cuba and Guantanamo Bay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. Luke, what have you heard about this?
Well, the United States has had a naval base in Guantanamo Bay for over a century now. And, just in the last 15 years, we've opened prison camps on that naval base. If we close the prison camps by transferring the remaining prisoners to U.S. soil, it really does nothing to affect the status of the naval base itself. You know, the naval base already has about 2,000 military personnel who are stationed there, and that would continue to exist, and it would continue to be under U.S. control. So the status of the prison camps doesn't change that at all.
Well, that's an important reminder, because I think we often talk about Guantanamo Bay as if it's just the prison camp, but it's obviously it's existed for much longer than that.
Yes, and it's held even before they detained terrorism suspects there. They held migrants there. They had a detention facility for migrants who were apprehended in the Caribbean. So, I mean, it's been used for different purposes over the years, but if the prison camps closed, the naval base remains.
Is the naval base itself controversial in any way? You know, how do the Cubans feel about having that there?
Well, the Cubans resent its presence, and it's a little confusing as to how the United States manages to continue to claim this territory. But there's been an agreement for over 100 years now, which has allowed the U.S. to maintain the naval base. Now, some people have argued that having prison camps on the naval base actually violates the terms of the agreement, because the naval base had always been used as a refueling station, and that was its purpose, and it wasn't supposed to be used for anything beyond that. So the fact that we've opened prison camps and we've kind of tried to hold people in this law-free zone, you know, some people have argued that really has violated our very presence there.
Right. Oh, that's very interesting. Thanks, Luke. We have another caller. We have Rob from Alabama calling in. Rob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. The previous caller addressed a little bit of what I was going to say, and that is that my understanding is that the majority of the individuals that are held in Guantanamo Bay are actually people that have not been arrested but have actually been captured, and the distinction being, you know, one from a civil standpoint of a person being a criminal versus somebody in a military situation that would be captured. And then my understanding is that if they were to be brought onto U.S. soil, that it would be more of a due process scenario as opposed to a military scenario. And I'm in favor, from the information that I understand, that we keep Guantanamo Bay open. And I know that there's obviously always imperfections as far as possible human rights violations, but I think it serves a greater purpose, in that the reality of it is that there is ISIS and terrorists that are trying to destroy the Christian faith, which was just realized in Pakistan, and that unfortunately that brings us into an arena where we have to fight them militarily, which is a very unpleasant situation, but it is the reality of life.
Thank you very much for your call, Rob. It brings up this point of the way in which we fight wars, we fight battles, is changing a lot these days. It's not as black and white as it once was. And it requires extra attention, I think, to make sure that we don't violate the rights of people as we go forward, but also maintain safety. Luke, would you like to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate those security concerns, and especially the safety of Christians in that part of the world. When you look at, you know, there have been 780 men who have been detained in Guantanamo Bay over the last 15 years. The vast majority of those men were actually apprehended by coalition forces, not the United States military itself. And a lot of these were turned over to the United States in exchange for bounties. So it's not true that the United States apprehended these men on the battlefield, so to speak. And another really sort of amazing part of the Guantanamo story, which is really underappreciated, is that President Bush himself released far more men than President Obama from Guantanamo Bay. You know, I said 780 men have been held there. President Bush himself released over 500 men during his 8 years in office. So I think it sheds light on this claim that the people who are being brought there are the worst of the worst. They're a danger to the United States. The Bush administration themselves recognize that in the majority of cases, we have the wrong men, or these men were really not a threat to the United States. So that's the whole reason for due process. It's to determine who's committed a crime and who's not, who has not. And if somebody has not committed a crime, they should be released. I think this is where our ethical teaching and Catholic social teaching really plays a role in this, the golden rule. If it were our brother or sister or mother or father who was arrested, you know, what kind of due process would we expect to protect their dignity and their rights?
Right. In some ways, does having Guantanamo open and operating distract from sort of the larger, more real threats, whether through time or resources that might be out there right now?
Yeah, that's an argument President Obama makes repeatedly, is that, you know, the whole symbol of orange jumpsuits and black hoods and indefinite detention is a recruiting tool for terrorists, and it makes it more difficult to work with international allies when we ourselves, you know, are abusing people's human rights. So he would very much see it, and that's President Obama, and that's part of the argument that he makes, is that it's really a distraction from really effective counterterrorism strategy.
Right.
Now, I think one of the points that Rob was picking up on was echoed by Senator John McCain when he released a statement on President Obama's latest proposal. Now, Senator McCain is in favor of closing Guantanamo, but his concerns is that there's really, as he said, no coherent policy to deal with future terrorist detainees. So I guess that's the question, though. You know, we have this set of detainees now, and the question of how to deal with them is what we've been talking about. But there's still a lot of disagreement about how you handle these, you know, people we might capture either in war or elsewhere in the future.
Well, we have a well-established process for actually adjudicating these terrorism suspects. You know, over 1,000 terrorism suspects have been prosecuted in the federal court system over the last 20 or 30 years. And the conviction rate is extraordinarily high. So the United States has been able to investigate and to produce evidence and to get convictions in federal court. That is actually the complete opposite effect that Guantanamo Bay has had. Like I said, 780 men have been held there. It's only resulted in 8 convictions in military commissions. So that's only 1% of the men who have been held there. And of those 8 convictions, 4 have actually been overturned on appeal. So in terms of holding people accountable and having a sustainable response to the real threat of terrorism, Guantanamo Bay has not sort of lived up to its promise or what we were sold. But federal courts have been very effective at responding to terrorism. So I really think that's the way forward. And I think Senator McCain, you know, should be able to see that.
Now, Luke, you mentioned the orange jumpsuits, the black hoods, and those are images that have become very prevalent in the protests against Guantanamo Bay. And I know you've been active in some of these protests and know a lot of people who have worked to try to end the detentions at Guantanamo Bay. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your experience and those groups and sort of what motivates them, what brings them together, and how effective you think that's been.
Yeah, you know, the group Witness Against Torture that I've been involved with has really been focused on learning the stories of the men who have been detained in Guantanamo Bay. So I had an opportunity, it was about 6 years ago now, to travel to Bermuda on behalf of the group to meet with 4 Turkish Uyghurs who were imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay for 7 years and then resettled in Bermuda as free men. They were exonerated very early on, and it took 7 years for the United States to find another country to receive them. But, I mean, that's really what motivates my passion about this, is knowing a lot of their stories and the way that imprisonment has affected their lives, their relationships with family, their hopes to have a family themselves. So I think in the protests, which are often silent and simply involve the presence of people wearing orange jumpsuits and black hoods and holding signs, they've been very powerful because it reminds people that the prison is still open, that human beings are being held there, and these are human beings with dignity and with rights, and it kind of makes that reality present in a very powerful way. So I think, you know, in some ways the organization has really kept the issue alive and has kept the spotlight on Guantanamo Bay. So it, you know, it's still on the president's agenda, as you know, like he submitted a plan to Congress about a month ago to lay out how he plans on closing Guantanamo. I think it keeps the spotlight on the issue, and we'll see, you know, what kind of fruit it bears in the long term.
Right. Well, Luke, where can people go to learn more about Guantanamo Bay, to learn more if they want to get involved in a group like Witness Against Torture?
Well, America has a webpage that includes a lot of the resources from both my visits there in 2012 and 2013, different editorials and feature stories we've had on Guantanamo Bay. So they can go to americamedia.org /Guantanamo, and they can find all of those resources. And if they're interested in doing something and becoming more active in the effort to close Guantanamo Bay, I'd recommend that they go to Witness Against Torture's website, and that web address is witnesstorture.org.
Well, thank you so much, Luke. Thanks for sharing your stories and the stories of the people that you met there. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
So we've been listening to Luke Hansen talking about Guantanamo Bay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Alex Nava about hip hop theology. A little change of pace. And so you're listening to the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.